This podcast is part of the Acast Creator Network.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to The Stand with Eamon Dunphy. Now, President Putin and the Chinese Communist Party leader, President Xi Jinping, are meeting in Moscow. It's a three-day meeting. There are talks about also a phone call between Xi and Zelensky, the Ukrainian president, but as we are recording on Tuesday, we don't have any news of that yet. But what is happening in this visit, but also what's happening in Russia and around Vladimir Putin is of continuing interest. And it's a pleasure to welcome Dmitry Ilovsky to The Stand. Dmitry has been guiding us from a Russian perspective throughout this conflict, and we're very grateful and happy every time we get to talk to him. He is a presenter and chief editor of the YouTube channel Kordakovsky.live. Before that, Dmitry was former deputy editor-in-chief for TV Rain in Moscow, but TV Rain was taken off air by Putin because they were doing their job as journalists, and Dmitry went to Lithuania and is now working freely as a journalist. Dmitry, it's good to talk to you again, and we're very grateful to you for joining us.
Hello, thank you very much for having me. Hi.
Now, these talks between Xi and Putin, when we see the images, I'm sure you've seen them, it's very much the man and the boy. In other words, Xi looks confident and comfortable. Putin looks almost deferential and small. Is that your impression or is it just me?
I think I agree with you, but we know that they still have very good relations between them, and they call each other friend and comrade and etc. So I think that really these talks are quite important for both sides. But definitely Russian position is, I guess, more weak than Chinese one, because Russia is indeed for some new arms, for financial support, for technologies. And I know that China and its leader, Xi, they still have some plans about Russian territories, about Russian resources. And we know that China is a very difficult partner for negotiations. And we will never know what exactly was today on the table to discuss and what will be the real outcomes. But we already know that, for instance, like some years ago, Moscow and Beijing signed a gas agreement.
Yes.
And Russia started to sell gas to China. So everybody was treating it like a very important issue and very important agreement. But we know that Russia is selling gas to China with unbelievable discount, something around 70%, I believe. So I guess the outcome of these talks and of this meeting would not be very much profitable for Russian part, but it will be definitely good for Chinese.
Yes, and it appears that the Russian economy is holding up okay, despite the sanctions that were imposed and have continued to be imposed by the European Union, British, Americans, and everyone else. The Russian economy actually this year will fare better than the British economy. British are the only major nation below Russia in the growth this year. So I wonder what your sense is of how the people, the Russian people, are feeling now about the war. I saw a woman interviewed last night on British television on Channel 4. It was a vox pop on the street, and the presenter asked her about the latest horror, which is the abduction of children and some adults as well, taken from Ukraine, taken to somewhere remote, and also, of course, a war crime. And it was put to the woman, the Russian woman on the street, that he was indicted and the International Criminal Court were seeking to arrest Putin. And she was asked what she thought about it. And she said, with a smile, "I don't care." It was a remarkable. Mm-hmm. She was kind of phlegmatic. She didn't care.
Mm-hmm.
She said, "That's, you know, so what?" Would that be a fair representation of the mood of the Russian people?
That's quite peculiar indeed. I believe that the attitude to the war is rather different between different people in Russia, because I think that in big cities such as Moscow, St. Petersburg, Yekaterinburg, people don't feel war that much, but they really don't care, and they try to live their own life.
Yes.
I think they still see the impact of sanctions, but it's not that terrible and that vast as West thought it should be.
Yes.
But still, it exists. And, you know, from my perspective, these economical sanctions are something like a dish, a meal that has to be served cold. So we have to wait a little
yes.
bit for it to cool down, and we'll see what's going on. But the other attitude to the war and to the special military operation, as they call it in Russia, as you might know, is different in small towns and villages, because mainly soldiers are recruited not from Moscow or St. Peter. They are taken from that small towns, from villages, and from the places where less than 1,100 people live. And I believe that people in that towns, they do feel that the war is taking more and more people, and that the funerals are happening almost every day there. So I am almost sure that they do believe. And the third part, which is actually very important, is Russian southern regions and Crimea, which was annexed by Putin in 2014, because that region, such as Belgorod, Kursk, Crimea, as I said, Voronezh region, they are now suffering from almost everyday attacks by Ukrainian drones. There are not so many casualties for now, but still it still happens. And people now understand that they live somewhere not very far from the front line, somewhere where the battles happen every day, and somewhere where people are dying every day. So this is quite important, I guess.
The other day, Putin visited Mariupol and Crimea. Mariupol, of course, is remembered as a city that no longer exists except in the ruins. And it was a spectacular demolition job by General Armageddon, who may not be around anymore. I'm not sure where he is. But General Sergei Sorovikin, is he still in the battle, or has he been moved to one side?
Well, we've seen Putin visiting Rostov-on-Don city, which is situated not far from the Ukrainian border, and where the military headquarters is now. And he's been speaking to General Gerasimov, who is now in charge of the Russian war in Ukraine. And we've seen actually Mr. Sorovikin, General Armageddon there.
Yes.
So he was nearby. He's not taken off completely. But I don't think that neither Suravikin nor Gerasimov are making any important decisions these days in terms of war in Ukraine. I guess it's still directed from Moscow, from Kremlin, but it would be it wouldn't be Putin style to take off military commanders midst the war, like
yes.
something like it's still going on, so it's not time to do some human resources management.
Right.
We have to see that people till the end of the war, till the victory, is putting things, but till its complete failure, as I suppose. So those two guys still exist, and they still report to Putin.
Now, Prigozhin, he is the leader, I believe, of the Wagner Group. This is a paramilitary group. They recruit in the prisons. They are, many of them, very good fighters, effective fighters. Prigozhin, is he close to Putin, or did I read that he had been critical of Putin?
He's critical to Ministry of Defense.
Right.
He cannot be critical to Putin because everything he has, he has to be grateful to Putin himself.
Yes.
You know? Prigozhin was his cook, his chief, for some time. And after that, he helped to bring Putin's money to offshores. And afterwards, he was appointed as the head of private military company Wagner, but which is, let me be fair, they are pretty good at war. They
yes.
are better than Russian defense ministry.
Yes.
But they do have some serious troubles in communication with defense minister Shoigu, and they have a huge lack of armory, of missiles, and they really suffer about it. And so Prigozhin, he almost every day posts some like new texts or audio messages in his social networks where he's begging for help, where he's begging for new armory, for new missiles. And he's quite popular, I guess, in Russia. You know, he was traveling through Russian prisons to take
yes.
prisoners to the front line to the war. That was so successful that the defense ministry decided that they should actually do that. They should apply that scheme, and they has forbidden Prigozhin to draft people from the prisons. So now it's Shoigu who takes care of the prisoners and takes them to the war. We know that Prigozhin has recently opened a number of recruiting centers in Russia.
Right.
In big cities, it's about like 40 different cities and towns. So now he's looking for volunteers. And I've read today that in the nearest future, he will draft like a new 30,000 men to the war in Ukraine.
Now, the casualties that we read, there has been an estimate that Russia has lost maybe 200,000 fighters, Ukraine maybe 60 or 70,000. And I remember at the time of the Soviet Union and their involvement in Afghanistan that I think they lost 10,000. And it was said that the mothers of these soldiers were the ones who made the most protest, and many people believe that led to the downfall of the Soviet Union. Do you give that story any credibility? And where are the mothers of the 200,000 military personnel who have been lost in this conflict?
Well, let's make it very clear that if we say lost, it doesn't mean dead. It means wounded or died. And
right.
To continue, I think that there is a huge difference between war in Afghanistan and war in Ukraine.
Yes.
Because first of all, many Russian people, vast majority actually, still think that this is a war against fascism, against
yes.
Nazis who are trying to conquer Russia. And they
yes.
don't actually care very much. There are no evidences about it, but they still believe that the West has occupied, Nazi West has occupied already Ukraine, and they are already at the borders with Russia. And if Putin wouldn't start the war back in February last year, then Russia will be conquered by some like mythical Nazis and fascists. So they treat this war as a great war, as something which is very similar to the war against the Nazis in the middle of last century. So that's why they don't protest. They still believe that their sons, their husbands, their brothers died in a great and in some sort of fair against conquerors.
So the only information the Russian people get from journalism, from television, is the state television channel, which is full of people who are pro the special military operation or the conflict and pro Putin. And they are churning out this propaganda night after night. And we have seen the pictures of it, the images of it, and they're pretty fierce looking presenters.
Mm-hmm. Fair enough, because propaganda is the only view of this war. I mean, Russian people, they are not bloodthirsty. They are not cruel. They are not evil. And they actually, I know it's hard to believe these days, but they don't differ too much from any other European nation.
Yes.
But they still live in a huge empire. And they still believe to propaganda. They don't have any critical thinking because of Soviet Union, actually, I guess, because they lived in for hundreds of years in Soviet Union in totalitarian dictatorship, where all the critical thinking was forbidden. So afterwards, there was a short decade, which was very tough and which was very difficult for many Russians, because it was a very fast jump and very fast transfer to liberal world.
Yeah, this that was the Yeltsin years, yes?
Yes, exactly, yes. And people just didn't know how to live in that new world. So not many, not everyone actually could find a way out.
Yes.
And afterwards, in the beginning of Nazis, Putin came up, and what he started actually was rebuilding Soviet Union very slowly, but brick after brick. And so we are where we are now.
And where is this special military operation going? The fighting at the moment, as we understand it, is around Bakhmut. Now, Bakhmut means nothing because it's just a shell, isn't it? Why are they fighting both sides? Is it just for morale?
This is a very good question, actually. And I don't think anybody can answer it right now, because nobody knows about the real purposes of this war. First of all, there was some talks about denazification, demilitarization, de-Ukrainization of the country. I haven't heard these words for months, to be fair.
Yes.
So we do not know where it's going. And I don't think that it really bothers people in Putin's administration, because they are very much aimed these days not to the goal, not to some result, but to the process itself.
Yes.
The process means everything.
Yes.
And stopping this process at any stage would mean crisis to Russia and crisis to Putin.
Yeah. I mean, he seems to be in a position, Dmitry, where he can't enter negotiations, as people are saying there has to be negotiations at the end of every conflict, which is, I suppose, true up to a point. But Zelensky really can't go into negotiations either, unless he gets, for example, Crimea back and all what he claims to be Ukrainian territory. So when you sort of think about it and your friends and you talk, how does this end? What do you come up with?
It could end only by complete defeat of Putin's army in Ukraine. And for instance, let's imagine scenario when everything goes to the situation which we had on 23rd of February 2022. Yes. It will not be that way. It cannot keep on going that way.
Yes.
Because the Putin's army will face guerrilla wars, partisans, and it will never end up. So I think the only way is that Ukraine goes back to its borders of 1991, including the whole Donbas region and yes. the whole Crimea. I'm actually pretty much worried that Ukraine army can go further to Russia, and you know it might happen. And they might go to some southern regions of Rostov-on-Don, of Belgorod, which sometime, I believe, in 19th century, were parts of Ukraine. Definitely, they will be interested in staging a new government in Moscow. And that what actually bothers me and my friends and many experts with which I talk about this issue. But the only, I once again, the only end of this war could be only the restoring and restoration of Ukraine in the borders of 1991.
Yes, and I think the West is worried about this aspect of Zelensky, that he will want too much,
mm-hmm.
That he won't know when to stop. That's why they're not giving him some of the ultra weaponry that he, you know, that could reach into Russia. That's why, whilst people admire him in the West, there is a sense that he might ask for too much and he might push it too far.
I don't agree with you about that. I think that the West doesn't want to make Putin angry by
right.
Supplying some really modern and really far-going and far-distance
yes.
missiles and guns. You know, but what we see now and what bothers me more is that definitely Ukrainian army is using drones to fight some Russian territories.
And yes.
Sometimes they go deep to the country, even to not far to Moscow region. But the thing is that Ukrainian spokesperson never admitted. They
yes.
always say it's not Ukraine, it's not our deed. We don't want to fight on the territory of Russia. We don't do drone attacks to the Russian territory. And that might be like some Russian partisans.
Yes,
I mean there are no Russian partisans who can plot a drone attack on Russian territory. I mean it's impossible. It sounds really strange. So what we see now is that Ukraine is. Using in a very good and smart way Russian rhetoric, because you remember that in the year of 2014 there was a Russian mantra saying it's not us, we are not there,
yes,
it's
that's
not
right.
our
yes.
boys,
yeah.
And so this is what Kyiv is saying nowadays,
right.
Like repeating one in one that words.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
The future for your generation, Dmitry, and your generation's view of a post-Putin Russia, is there any concept of a Russia post Vladimir Putin, or is he there for as long as he likes?
He will be gone sooner or later. And you know, last week there was St. Patrick's holiday, and
yes,
we've been celebrating it as well in Vilnius. And I've been speaking to my friends who were having a good time drinking beer, and I told one of them that I told one of them about our conversation with you, and
yes,
you said once that you should think about Russians maybe in terms of Irish immigration. And I think that this concept, this idea is,
yes,
very helpful and very vital, because now many Russians have left the country,
yes,
but one day we'll still be back, and
yes,
we all will have an opportunity to be back, and we all will have a chance to be a new country, which can be part of European country, European Union, European,
yes,
continent. But of course, and only after admitting responsibility for all the actions of Putin and his army in Ukraine.
What about Medvedev, who was president when Putin had to take some time out because of the constitution? Of course, Putin came back. Medvedev has been making noises too about nuclear attacks on Britain, for example. Is he just a kind of stooge?
Well, you know, there are rumors that he's drinking heavily, like,
right,
really heavily.
Yeah.
And that he is trying to be even more mean than
right,
the Russian propaganda. I don't think we should treat him seriously, because,
okay,
it looks like he's writing his posts on Twitter and on Telegram,
yes,
only for one person. I know this sort of writing social posts is called gatsbing, when you do,
yes,
something only for one person, and he's gatsbing only for,
right,
Vladimir Putin. So,
okay,
he might be doing only notes from his hand and pass them over to Putin, but he's doing that to the multi-million audience. I don't know why, but anyway, he's a clown.
Let me ask you a final question, Dmitry, about the atmosphere around Putin, the people who are around Putin, and the mood of those people if this next phase of the war goes badly. How will they react? Are they all committed to Putin, or would he be in danger if the next phase of this conflict goes badly? I'm talking about the next three, four months.
It depends on how it will go, definitely. But anyway, there was a meeting between Putin and Russian business community,
yes,
last week. And we saw many people there, many oligarchs, many businessmen, many people actually who do run the country, who do run the business, who have,
yes,
millions of jobs and millions of money on their bank accounts. But we actually, we didn't see some of them, very, very important people that were usually around Putin, that were helping him.
Yes.
So we can definitely say that some oligarchs are turning back from him, but there is still a long way to go. And but on the other hand, I believe that people are getting used to live in
yes,
a situation of war, and they do understand that it may take a very long time, and they looks like they are ready for it.
Okay, a final. I'm asking you to make a judgment call, or even a guess, an educated guess. How long will this conflict last, in your view, Dmitry?
I don't think I can answer this question.
No, it's not a fair question. Let me ask it another way.
Mm-hmm.
Do you ever have a bet in the casino?
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah.
Suppose you go to the casino and there's three bets.
Mm-hmm.
Short war, medium war, long war. And you have all your money. You take it out of the bank. Where would you put the money?
Well, I have to ask you, what do you mean by short?
Short means it ends this year. Medium means mm-hmm. it ends 12 months from now.
Mm-hmm.
And long means it goes on for years.
I'm such a bad gambler, you know.
Maybe you should have another Guinness.
Well, let me put it that way. I believe that this year will be the most important for the world.
Right.
This year we'll see who win by the end of this year. I'm not sure that the war will end up, but it depends on whether West will be still eager and will still supply arms and missiles and money to Ukraine from one hand. But from the other hand, it depends on whether Putin will be able to build up his resources, to get some help from Asian countries, and whether he will be able to get a new mobilization. So these two factors are crucial. And I think that maybe this summer there will be the most important battles. And before the next winter, we will see how and when the war will end, I guess so.
Okay, Dmitry, that's very interesting. And it's always good to talk to you. I'm glad I'm glad you celebrated St. Patrick's Day. we certainly did here. And let's hope, please God, that this is all over in Patrick's Day next year. Thank you very much for joining us. Dmitry Alovsky is a very brave Russian journalist. He's out of the country now, living in Lithuania. He is the presenter and chief editor of a YouTube channel called Khodorkovsky.live. Khodorkovsky, of course, is one very brave man who stood up to Vladimir Putin. We're grateful to Dmitry. We wish him well and be safe. To all of you for listening, that's all we have time for now. We'll talk to you soon.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.